Everyone, it's Thursday night, 8 o'clock. It's time for my first bet, and we're going to be talking with Gary Lenton, part two, going through some betting stories. Also talking about a few other things to keep us occupied during this lockdown time. Who's his favorite All Black, his favorite all-rounder, some interesting names we've discussed already, and we'll have a little competition or two around that as well. I just brought myself up on the screen so you can see what I look like after about a better part of a week of not shaving, but I'm going to pale into significance with my guest tonight, who's starting to look hairy and hairier by the week, and it's a big welcome to Gary Lenton. Gary, should I take Gary out this feed instead of bringing him in? Gary, good to have you on the show again. Now, we had a great chat last week and looking forward to continuing it this week.
Brent, yes, so am I. Really am. And yeah, I also never shaved this morning, but you'll see how long this beard can grow for. I've reached a stage where it's probably too late for me to go and start shaving now. It's probably too long, so I'm going to hang in there until the lockdown finishes, and then I'm going to go have a nice clean shave. And look, I just must say one thing, and it's really important, that two very learned people, neither of them that live in South Africa, one that's in America and the other one that's in the UK, both sent me messages saying that I say, do you know what I mean, or you know, far too often. Now, something that obviously comes out subconsciously, but something that I never knew what, I know what mine was, but I heard today as well in a meditation session that I was in, that when you say these things too often subconsciously, you're starting to speak out of your, without making conscious efforts to do things. So what I'm going to try and do tonight, as impossible as it is, I'm going to try and limit my, do you know what I mean? And do you know, whatever it is, anything connected to that. And if I say it five times, I'm going to give myself four. If I say it five times, I'm going to do an extra 15 minutes on the elliptical tomorrow at full speed.
Okay.
Definitely going to give R1,000 to charity tomorrow. But I tell you what I'm going to do. If I don't say it five times, I'm going to give 1,500 to charity tomorrow. So I'm going to do it. And the clock starts now. And anybody here that hears it, they're welcome to jump on and tell me that I talk in my subconscious state more, which is probably the truth anyway. So let's see how we go. Nearly slipped out there, but I...
you know what I mean, Gary. You know what I mean.
And I sort of held back and, yeah, so we're okay. We're ready to roll.
Well, we got the live viewers on there. I've already got a comment there from Oracle Rugby, Keelan Creel as well. So Oracle, you love your admin. You keep a listen out for Gary. And if he says, do you know what I mean? Then quickly pop it on the live chat as well. Because sometimes we may not, I must say, Gary, it's not something I notice when I chat with you. But Brendan also, my one mate, and he loves your shows, by the way. He was the one I sent you the comment. And he says, he loves it. He says, I love it when Gary says, do you know, you know what I mean, you know? So, but it's when you're chatting with someone, you don't pick it up.
Well, if I got a few in credit towards the end, I'll bomb out three or four quickly for Brendan.
Excellent. Keelan Creel. Now, Brendan, I know he did say he can't watch live tonight, so he's going to watch it tomorrow. But Keelan Creel, thanks, Gary, for the Poker Bros mention last week. Really impressed with their great app. Now, we are going to talk about that later in the show. So thanks, Keelan, for that feedback as well. We're going to talk about that because I think, Gary, and let's talk quickly about this, where we are at the moment. We've got the lockdown on the go. And things like poker, the ability for guys to go and play with their mates, play poker, is just exploded. I mean, the demand has gone through the roof because people can't meet to play poker or do anything else. And what a great social experience it is to play with your mates in a forum. I can tell you what I've done with a couple of guys is we played and then we hook up on one of these Zooms or house parties. Mm. So you're actually chatting while you're playing. It's the next best thing to actually be sitting opposite the guy at the table.
It absolutely is. I just want to mention one other thing about house party and how guys from all around the world have come there. And without being a name drop, I don't know, but there have been one or two celebrities that have joined into our chats from time to time. And they've done it on such a humble basis. And it's been really fun to catch up with guys and see them at home where they're not being, you know, where they don't have any sort of pressure about
I know what you mean, Gary. I know what you mean.
Yeah, where they don't have any pressure, they don't have to impress anybody, and they can just be themselves. And you see them in their home environment. And I've really enjoyed it. And we had a particularly good time speaking last Sunday to an ex-South African that played cricket for England. It's scored a hell of a lot of runs for England. He sometimes made his hair blue, and he really did really well for England, and it was great. And he showed us a chair that his wife had made for him, which was made from all the shirts, all these famous shirts that he had worn. So each square was a shirt. It was absolutely brilliant. And I must say one thing. He did have his Dolphins shirt there, along with shirts where he won the Ashes and a lot of things like that. And it was really great that he joined in the chat and he one of the guys, and it was a lot of fun. But anyway, you know, these health... 2 and we haven't even been going for 3 minutes. I cannot believe it. But at least I'm picking them up, which is already a move into my concert. 2, I can't. Anyway.
Well, maybe this comment's a bit relevant here. He says it 5,000 times, not 5 times. So we'll see if you can match that.
Exactly. Just what I needed. Giovanni now watching everything that I say. So let me tell you something. Gio doesn't, the sweetest things do come out of his mouth. But one thing's for sure, Gio didn't get his elocution lessons at Oxford or Cambridge. That I can guarantee you. But a great guy, Gio. One of my favorite poker players of all times. Although he's a hell of a lot younger than me. He's not a Daniel Negreanu or anything like that. He's a hell of a good player. And he's one of those players that everybody around the table really love. Whether he takes their money or loses his money, he gives action. He's fun at the table. He's hell of a knowledgeable. He understands the game. He understands so much about the game. And he's the future of poker. There's no doubt about it in South Africa. He's one of the shining stars in a lot of aspects of the game. And that's one of the things I just wanted to touch on before we go to Poker Bros and everything. It's just part of Poker Bros. Like some people are saying to me, Gary, why are you endorsing a site? You don't do a site. You do live poker. Why are you coming and endorsing a site? And it's quite a simple answer, Brent. My aim in poker in this country is to keep the game going. It's to keep the fire burning. To make sure that people continue. When we come back, I have no doubt whether the sites continue or not. That I don't know. I have no interest in any site. I don't have 1% of any site. But the fact that people are playing poker and more people are playing poker, whether it's online, which is the only option now, these guys will come to my tournament in 3 months' time, whenever their tournament will be. The sooner the better. We haven't, like I said, we haven't cancelled WPT. I'm sending that message out again. We postponed it. This tournament in exactly the same structure will happen later in the year. But for now, my job is to make sure that poker continues in South Africa and goes from strength to strength. And a site like Poker Bros, and especially the one that I'm endorsing, which we're going to put up their website later, and I fully endorse it because I know that the payments are perfect. I know that the games are 100% legit, and I know how much the guys are loving it. I can't say enough about it. And it's the same thing. I just want to say one other thing. And that is even Silver Sands. Silver Sands is absolutely thriving at these times. And that's also fantastic. And there's room for 2 of them. I don't think there's room for 40 of them, like all these other guys springing up and opening small Poker Bros. I don't see any benefit in that. Rather, it's almost like you need the liquidity. So jump onto one of the Poker Bros. I know which one I suggest. It's the biggest. They're running a series of tournaments. I'm talking a lot and I haven't said one, you know what I mean. They're running a series of tournaments that started last week. It finishes on Sunday. They guaranteed 4.5 million rand. Their rakes are small. Everybody's getting paid on the turn. Somebody won a tournament last night. I think the first prize was 150 grand in his account. Bang. The guys won some of my super high rollers as well that won it. So, you know, there are a lot of famous people on the site and you're welcome to ask them who they are. If they want to tell you, they will. If they don't want to, they won't. You have to respect the people's privacy there. But for me, it's that people continue to play poker and continue to improve because you will improve playing on these sites. Anyway, this tournament, the Poker Bros this week, on Sunday is their main event. I think there's 1 million rand guaranteed. That's not bad for a site that opened just 5 days ago, Brent. And I'll tell you something. I know a lot of good friends of mine, and I know at least one person on this chat, maybe even 2 when I talk to you offline, that will be playing in that event. And, you know, let's speak to the owners. Maybe the guys even want to throw you in, Brent. I throw you into all of my tournaments because of the great work you do and the way you give poker exposure and push my event. I always put you in. I mean, it's no different to if I went there and I put the 15,000 Rand in a bottle, closed the bottle and threw it into the sea across the road from me and saw if it landed back here in 3 months' time. That's about as much chance I've got of getting a return on my investment. But I'm going to answer that question now.
I thought I'd bring it up because it is a good one to chat about.
I'm pushing them. I hope maybe 1 or 2 of them are listening. You never know. Maybe they put you into the main event, Brent. Let's see. We'll have to play it. But yeah, the answer is it's a gray area. I don't know if they're taking cash or what they're doing. Some of the games are legal. Some of the games aren't legal. As a player, I don't think anybody's going to get arrested. I don't know. I almost feel in times like this, and I'm not suggesting for 1 second to break the law. If you were to say to me, and I don't have the right to say that, but we're talking now, just having a casual conversation. Yes, I know that at any stage, the entire world can watch it. But if you said to me, are you better off going out because you're bored and visiting your friend a kilometer away? Or are you better off staying at home and playing a little bit of poker online with your mates that way? To me, it's a no-brainer. Stay at home, play online. When this is all lifted and the lockdown's finished, if you want to close your online accounts, that would be my advice to you. It's not legal. It's certainly not legal then. Now it might be a grey area. The gambling boards aren't even open for them to get permission on Poker Bros. I don't know how they're doing it. The gambling boards aren't open. Stay at home. You love poker, go there. You can make a school for yourself, for your own mates, and you don't even have to play for money. Just the main thing is stay at home. I hope this will help poker thrive. And I promise you now, when we do open, I'm promising you now, guys, that poker will be stronger than ever in South Africa. We're going to blow people's socks off. I'm starting to sound like Donald Trump. At least they haven't got their hair. But I'm telling you, when poker does open again in South Africa, we're going to bomb it. And I'm going to maybe talk out of turn because obviously I've got other stakeholders and partners, but I'm going to have the biggest free roll. And we've had free rolls before where we've guaranteed R1 million. I'm going to have a free roll, and I promise you now, where we're going to break all records and guarantee well over R1 million. And everybody that's watching and plays poker, we're going to have 2 day ones. Let's just break all records. Let everybody now decide. We have this free roll. We have cheap rebars, cheap re-entries. Let's aim for 500 players. And let's, you know, I don't think that one counts because that one I was leading into a sentence.
We'll let you off that one. You're still on two, Gary.
Okay, great. And let's all just get behind all these things that are important to us that we sometimes take for granted. But we're going to put up a link later to the Poker Bros.
Yeah, we'll come. Website. We'll come back. Let's talk about you've touched on the legality side, but let's bring it back at the end, and I'll put the website up as well so the guys can see it, Gary. But Gary, you've given me a list. We're going to run a little competitions just while we're chatting today. We obviously want to talk about betting stories and maybe just some sport related things as well. Like I see you've given me who's your favorite All Black and that. And what we're going to do is we're going to put up a question, and I'm going to bring it up on here. And for the guys that are in the live chat, whoever gets it right first, we'll get a R250 voucher at GG Gaming. And I think you said if someone manages to get all of them correct first time, they would get a R10,000 voucher split between however many gets it right. But you only allowed one shot, at each one.
4 out of 5 will get the R10,000. If nobody gets 4 out of 5, everybody that gets the top marks will go into a question that I'm not going to give multiple choice. And even if it's not for the 10,000, it'll be for another R1,000. So all the top marks will go into R1,000. The tiebreaker will be a question, which I already have. It's about NFL football. And also at the end of the show, we're going to ask 2 cricket questions this week. Not about me at all. 2 quick cricket questions. I'm not going to tell you what type of cricket questions. And we'll give the guys 15 seconds to get them each right. You get them right, there's going to be another R500. All these things, betting vouchers at GG Gaming. Do what you want with them. You don't have to spend it. There's a hell of a lot going on. We're betting on live. We're the only people at GG Gaming that's betting live in play on table tennis.
Wow. Okay, that's something.
Yeah, there's a lot of racing happening. We're sitting at home, pricing up on the racing, 6 o'clock in the morning. Our office is manned remotely from 6 in the morning till 10:30. We're betting on e-games. We're giving guys as much of an opportunity to have some fun. But I just want to stress in these times, keep it fun, boys. It's all about ladies as well. It's all about we're giving you entertainment, something to do. It's not about coming there and trying to stick yourself out. It's not what it's about. It's about having a bit of fun. But there is live in play table tennis from the Czech Republic and Russia.
Because my son and I want to play a game. He's never beaten me yet. He's 15. And I always said to him, I'll let you, when I was younger, I used to let him beat me at cricket in the garden and soccer. I said to my son, I will never let you beat me at table tennis. Never. The day you beat me is the day you beat me. And we're going to have a game this lockdown as well. I mean, maybe I'll have to film that and get a points handicap on that one.
I'm happy to price up on that. I'll make a market, right? I mean, I'm going to say there in the market, it's not an easy one. So that, I mean, doesn't count. I mean, I'm thinking I think that I would make a market on your son's points in the first game,
18.3. Okay. Nice. Okay.
I wouldn't be too question. Should we ask them the first question there? So,
Gary, I want to start with you've given me a few, but I want to start with what I think will probably be a fairly easy one. I could be wrong. And then after this, I just want to lead into a golf story that you told me a while ago when I had dinner with you in Cape Town. But a youngster, and I'll remind you, and hopefully it'll trigger your memory. I just remember being so entertained by the story. I'd like you to tell it. But here's the question: what is Gary's favorite golf major? The choices are A, Masters, B, the Open, C, the US Open, and D, the PGA. So obviously there's a bit of a delay on the feed, so the guys will get this a few seconds later. But let's see what answers come with. But Gary, I mean, golf majors, you know, as far as betting and that goes, it really is for me. I mean, I was so disappointed when the Masters was now postponed, because that for me is a signal of four great months of golf or four great tournaments almost in a row.
Of course, and I like the way that they've moved it now. I really have. But the way that having the tournament sort of close, more closely put together, grouped together the majors. I'll say this. Out of those four there, it actually annoyed me putting D in.
Although yes, I thought D wasn't a runner, yeah.
D's not a runner. It's not just, for me, the PGA is just another, they're much better golf tournaments. The Tour Championships are much better golf tournaments. There are a lot of golf tournaments, but we need to be grateful for every single golf tournament. So one of the things that's going to happen in this world, unfortunately, is we're going to see a lot of our favorite sports lose a lot of events. There's no doubt about it. I was chatting today. There's a possibility we don't see a President's Cup again. People might think I'm mad, but there's no doubt that the Ryder Cup is going to get moved to next year. There's no doubt about it. You can't have a Ryder Cup this year. There's not enough qualifications. So the Ryder Cup's going to go to 2021. That might put pressure on there ever being another PG and another President's Cup. I don't know. I might be talking nonsense. Who knows? Who knows? What happens with currencies? It puts pressure on everything. So we got to really embrace and love every bit of sport that we get when we come back. But we definitely know it's not the PGA. That I've told you. I'm not sure if you've had any answers in there, Brent.
I have. So this one is what I would have gone for. The first one up, Lonely or the Brave with A. The Masters. So that is first. We did have some other answers in there. The Open from Oracle. Just to welcome Shane. He's coming in from Ireland. He says times are really tough over there. Things are tough, but he's enjoying the fact that he can tune into the chat and just relax a bit. And that's the thing about this pandemic. It really is a global thing and affecting everybody and every sporting event globally, quite frankly. So welcome, Shane. Good to have you on the show. And well done to Lonely Are the Brave. So he's hit it with the first one there, the golf major. But Gary, tell me that story again about the, it was you and a mate. What was your mate's name that you played with and you went to a golf course together?
Well, you're not going to mention too many names.
Okay.
There's a guy called Mark. He's also involved in the poker industry. And off we go, one cold, wet winter's morning in Cape Town. We were here for something else, which was long before I moved here. And we head to Atlantic Beach. We get to Atlantic Beach, and there are not too many guys on the golf course. Mark's gone inside to pay. I'm outside sitting on the court waiting for Mark to come out, trying to keep warm. And this little kid comes up to me, and he says to me, good, he takes off his cap. He's so, so respectful, and that's part of the story that makes it great. He says, good morning, sir. My name is, let's call him John. That wasn't his name. Same initial. Good day, sir. My name is John. Can I join you? So I said to him, John, does it look like I've come apart? That one went straight over his head. At that stage, he had no sense of humor. So I wasn't like mad about a 10 or 11 or a 12-year-old joining our golf game. We were a two-ball. We had played the day before. I'd done my money to Mark. I wanted to try and get it back. So I say, I'm pretty sure that there's no way Mark's going to let a kid join us. So I say, go inside. There's a guy in the pro shop, slightly overweight as well, and he's wearing shorts that don't fit him and a shirt that fits him even worse. Go up to him, and if he says you can play, you can play. I'm not getting involved in this. Pretty certain that Mark's going to tell him to get lost. Anyway, it's not 3 seconds later, and John's back there. 3 minutes later. Mark says he could think of nothing better. Yes. Mark's getting soft in his old age. All right, off we go. We get onto the first tee, and he says to me, what ball are you playing with? So I said, John, I'm playing with a Titleist Pro V1 number 2. He says, no, you need to have a marking on the ball. I said, what do you mean? He says, I've got an Irish Shamrock. I said, listen to me nicely, John. I don't care what you've got, and you're going to need that Shamrock to help you survive if you're going to get clever with me. Go down to the ladies' tee where the 12-year-olds should be and leave us alone. We've got Pro V1s. Don't worry about us. We're not at the... You. Anyway, he calms down, and off he goes to his tee, and we go and we hit. And John does nothing special on the first hole. He actually hits a really poor tee shot into the rough on the left. He drops a ball. It's another ball into the rough on the left. It's all quite relevant. Drops a ball, hits another ball into the rough on the left. So this is going to be a long day. And now it's wet and it's miserable. Anyway, we eventually get to the green and John comes running up there. Now, Atlantic Beach is known for its snakes. But he's been running in the rough like a complete nutcase. And he must come with a handful of balls, right? He says, look at this. I've got 7 Pro V1s, exactly what you play with, Mr. Gary. Yeah, please, can I give them to you? I said, I don't like second-hand balls. And stop running in the rough. You're going to get killed. Anyway, you tee up in the second hole. I'm not going to drag the story out too much, but at the second hole, they got some beautiful animal on the fairway, some buck or deer, whatever you call it. Mark and I are quite lazy, and we hit our balls, both of us short to the green on the left, but there's a little rope there that says you can't drive over it. But Mark thinks he can do whatever he wants, and he drives over the rope. John from the bottom of the fairway. Oi, you can't drive over there. Eventually, we say to John, if you want to play with us, you've got to play at our rules, not your rules. No, go on, everything's fine. We get to about the fourth or the fifth hole. I'm not sure, it's a par five. And John's done nothing at this stage. He never finished the first. He doubled the second. He bogeyed the third, and he doubled the fourth. He's done nothing. He's done nothing to show us that he's a golfer. And he hits his first decent tee shot at the fifth. I think it's a fifth and a not a bad second. And we're standing by his ball, and he says, that three wood that you got, Mark, that's my ultimate dream. I would do anything for a three wood like that. Do you mind if I hit it here? So Mark says, look, it's brand new. They only got to South Africa, which was true, about 10 days ago. I got the very first one. I got connections at the golfer's warehouse. They got me one. The club cost like 4,900 rand. I'm not sure I want you to hit it. You haven't shown me you're a good golfer. You could destroy my club. He says, I'll tell you what I'll do, Mark. You don't think I'm a good golfer. How about we have a bet here that I'll go no more than five over par from here to the finish? Mark says, John, you can't even hit the ball out of your shadow. You're seven over par for four holes. Now you're going to go five over for the red. He says, let's have a bet. Mark says, fine, you've got a bet. I don't want to win anything from you, John. I'll give you a Coke, a pie and Coke after the round if you can go five over. So I'll tell you what I'll do with you, Mark. You give me your three wood if I can go five over par from here on in. Now, Colt, I want to hit my shot and move on. I say, fine, you know what, John? You've got a bet. The man's a no-hoper. You make five over from here on in, you've got Mark's three wood. Can we just continue with the game? And off we go. Anyway, he then borrows Mark's three wood on that hole. And from about 195 into the wind, wet conditions, boom, he hits it just short of the green and he makes par. I know now Mark's in a lot of crap, right? I can just see it. This is couldn't make a double bogey anywhere. All of a sudden, he's knocking it not bad. Next hole, he stands on the tee, boom, boom, short of the green, makes par. Anyway, by the time we get to the ninth, somebody comes up to us, drives up to us, and they say, guys, I must just warn you. We see you playing with John. Be very, very careful. He's not as stupid or as bad as he looks. I said, don't worry. I've already realized that part of the story. Anyway, comes down to a part. He drops a couple of shots. It was really, really difficult conditions. And he's only 12 years old. Doesn't matter. He's playing from the ladies. And he comes to me and he says to me he's in big trouble at 16. I said, why, John? He says, he can only afford to make one more bogey. He's four over. He can only afford to make one. No, he's three over. He said, but he's definitely going to drop at 16 because he can see where the pin is. He's got the pin charts. He's got everything. And the pin's on the far left-hand corner of the par five there. And he can't get near that pin because he can't reach there. He can only get on three to the far right-hand corner and there's no way he can do but there. Unless, and then his next problem is at the par 317, he's got hard balls only. So he hasn't got a ball that he can stop and it will run right over the back. So now he knows everything about balls from a guy that couldn't make a double bogey. Now he's concerned that the ball he's playing with is a little bit hard and where the flag's tucked away at 16, he can't get near it. I know Mark's in a lot of trouble here, but now Mark's wanting to say to me, this is nonsense. You told him he could have a bet. You must give him your three wood. I said, I don't want my three wood. You want your three wood. I'd give him my three wood. Leave him alone. I'm not even involved in this. Anyway, exactly like he says, he plays 16 like he says, and he three putts. He's the best putt I've ever seen. The man hasn't, but he had no chance at 16. He had no chance. Anyway, the man hasn't missed a putt. From 5 foot, it's impossible. Anyway, 16, he makes bogey. He now has to play 17 and 18 level par to win the driver. 17 is a par three. He hits it and has got a ball that he thinks is going to run too far. And the flag's tucked in the front. Man's a genius. Hits it a little bit short. It doesn't quite reach the green. He putts from off the green. He's himself maybe five and a half foot. Never looks like missing, Brent. Never looks like missing. Straight in the back of the hole.
And under now pressure, geez.
No, under pressure. Now we get to 18. And Mark is the first person I've ever seen in minus three conditions. Absolutely sweating. The sweat is pouring off Mark. This guy, John, he's cool as a cucumber. But I look at 18, and there is no ways that this man can ever reach. It's not possible, not even from the ladies. It's impossible. We're into the wind, slightly up. He's got no chance. I promise you, you could put anybody there. He can't reach. He takes out his driver, and he stands on it. He hits it as hard as he possibly can. And it sort of just runs out of fairway on the left. But it goes past the semi-rough. It's not a great lie in the rough. Not a great lie. And he must have almost 200 yards in. And 18's protected but Bunk was in the front, if I do remember correctly. So I said to Mark, he's got no chance, you're safe. Anyway, the guy goes and he says he's only got one shot, and that is to hit his driver. I said, John, do what you want. I'm not getting involved in this. I opened my mouth once on the fifth, and now Mark wants to kill me. I'm not telling you what to do. Do what the hell you want. Good luck to you. Hit whatever you like. And the man takes out his driver, and I promise you now, I'll never forget what he says. Boom. And as he hits it, he takes off. He starts to run. Turns around. He says to Mark, I'll sign autographs later. And he carries on sprinting down the fairway. Boom. Lands on the green. Maybe 25 foot from the flag. Perfect. I've never seen a shot like this. Now he's got 25 foot to win. Mark's brand new three.
And this is a 12-year-old.
He's 12 years old. You can't get them in the country. Now there's drama. And Mark's carrying on and this and that. Anyway, we get to the green. And Mark goes up to me and says, John, we've taught you a really bad lesson today. We've taught you to become a punter. And that's really not good. I don't want you to hit this putt now. Because if you go and two putt, you're going to think that life is too easy and you can bet your way out of everything. If you three putt, you're going to go home and cry and have nightmares, and it's going to ruin your golf career. What I'd like to do for you, it's been a hell of a lot of fun playing with you, and you're a really good golfer. I'd like to take you into the pro shop afterwards, and I'm going to let you choose a three wood there and buy yourself some balls and a cap. And John turns to him and says, the most expensive three wood in that shop is 2,199 rand. How many balls and caps can you buy me? Yours is worth 4,999. I'm not interested. Out of my way, let me putt. Like this. Out of my way, let me putt. John, let me also get involved. I agree with Mark. It's not a good idea. You're 12 years old. You know, your mom stopped halfway to offer to give us 40 rand to pay for your lunch, which obviously we never took. But this is bad now. Now you're putting for something worth 5,000 rand. This is too big. It's not good. He says, hold on a second. And he turns to the clubhouse, and there's his mom on the balcony. He says, Ma, if I make two putts here, I get the guys three wood. Have you got any problem with that? She said, no. Now I know that this is a big problem, because all of a sudden, the whole family's involved in this. Anyway, hits his first bad putt of the day. Pressure does count. And he leaves himself 6 foot. He doesn't just short it. He hasn't been short the whole day. He leaves himself maybe 7 foot. So Mark sees this as an opportunity again, and he goes to him and he tries to negotiate another deal. His answer is, Jumbo, you're standing in my line. Please move. Yeah, Jumbo, standing in my line. Please move. What can Mark do? He moves, he comes, he stands at the cart with me, and the guy goes and he hits a putt, and it never looks like missing. Boom, right edge, down the hill, bang, into the back of the hole. He says, told you, Ma. He walks off the green. He comes to our cart. He takes the three wood out of Mark's bag, puts it underneath his arms like Graham Pollock used to do, and marches off. There goes John. Now Mark's black as anything, right? He's done his three wood. We chase him. We find the kid eventually in the pro shop, and I must admit, eventually Mark does a deal with the guy, and the guy gets a brand new three wood and a pair of shoes and a cap and about 14,000 golf balls. But it just goes to show, even a kid can con us guys that think we're so clever, Brent. It was brilliant.
No, I mean, and it's been a couple of years since I heard the stories. It was like I was listening to, I kind of knew what was going to happen, but I just love listening to that, because the thought of a 12-year-old hustling a couple of hardened punters like yourselves is absolutely unbelievable. But tell me just quickly, I mean, that 12-year-old, how good was he? I mean, is that the sort of kid who could go on to be a pro?
He's good. I'll tell you something interesting, Brent. I go look on the handicaps.
Yes.
Right? Because on handicaps, you can see people's handicaps and everything. And he's done pretty well as a junior. I think he has won tournaments. He certainly shoots, but now I would imagine he's probably 16 or 17. And I've seen that he makes a lot of scores in level par and under par as well. He was a proper golfer. I'm not saying he's an Ernie Els or anything like that, but he was a golfer. And today, he's probably at least a scratch golfer, judging by his scores that I see from time to time. No, he was a good golfer and a smart kid as well. And he was certainly cleverer than Mark and I.
Yeah, and you answered Oracle's question. He was asking how old is he now, about 16, 17. So, yeah, I mean, I love that one. Before we move off golfer, Gary, any betting stories for us? I mean, I know for me, some of my greatest wins have been at golf, and also some of my most heartbreaking misses. You know, I'll never forget Dustin Johnson once, before he'd won a major. I think it was a US Open. where he grounded his club. I'm not too sure if that was it. It could have been. I just remember being on Dustin Johnson at about 30-1, and he was leading, I think, by a shot. He grounded his club on that one of those. It didn't look like a bunker. It was more like a sand trap type thing. And he ended up taking a penalty that cost him the title. I mean, those are the sort of memories I have of golf betting.
Martin Kamer won that tournament. I'm pretty sure it was Martin Kamer. And what had happened is it was a bunker, but people had stood in it during the week.
Yes.
And it stopped looking like a bunker and everything. And it was Dustin Johnson. It was Martin Kamer. Sure, there are a lot of, you know, last week I told you about some really good golfing wins that I had. I backed Tom Kart straight out, the first and only time he ever won a major. I've made a lot of money punting on golf, but of course there have been some bad ones. It goes back. Let's just ask a question about the All Blacks, and I'm going to tell you about one of my biggest losses of all time, Joe Brent.
Okay, let me find the All Black question. I like this question because I really had to think about this one. This is Gary's favorite All Black now, guys. So we're looking for the answer A, B, C, or D. And take us through them, Gary.
All right. Well, I mean, obviously McCaw is a legend. Been knighted, won World Cups, won everything that you could do. I don't even know how many Super Rugbys he won with the Crusaders. You go a little bit further about McCaw. The one thing about McCaw, last week we spoke about people swapping from one union to the next and doing this and doing that. McCaw was a Crusader through and through. He was an All Black through and through. He never went to Japan. There was never any talk of McCaw. A true gentleman, and straight after the game, he stayed out of the limelight. I don't know. I've never heard anybody say anything wrong about Richie McCaw. Then obviously we've got Christian Cullen. I think Christian Cullen did a lot to change the game of rugby, the way he could attack from the back. Not the biggest of all rugby players, one of the most powerful, I think, pound for pound. There wasn't anything Christian Cullen couldn't do. He was one of those guys where, you know, he'd run and he'd put over a chip and you'd think, why is he chipping there? He had people outside him. He should have passed outside, or he could have cut inside. He could have done this. And 2 seconds later, he's got the ball in his hands and he's sprinting away, and you just see the genius of the man. Again, commentates, done a lot for rugby after the game. Very little. I've never heard anything bad about Christian Cullen. Obviously, Lomu, we've discussed before. A legend who, of course, it's tragic that he's not here. It's tragic that he left the planet too early. But also a great guy and somebody that did a hell of a lot for All Black rugby. Did a hell of a lot to bring the minorities to the forefront in New Zealand rugby. I don't think that there are not too many that have done much more than that. And again, you know, the world mourned as one when he left, and very sad. And there's nothing, again, a great, great All Black. Then obviously there's Carter. Not too many people have scored any more points than him in any format of the game, in any professional majors format of the game. Maybe the greatest fly half of all time. For my money, it's probably between, I would say, him and Johnny Wilkinson. Those are my two. And again, Carter always had fun with his mates, always had a positive outlook. Wherever he went, he brought success with him. There's very few, if any, like I said, maybe one fly half that I've seen in my life that's better than him. Again, a great gentleman. All four of those. There's nobody controversial there, Brent. They're four guys.
No.
You would love to have met in your life. You'd love to play golf with the three of them that are still alive. You'd love to have them to dinner. That's a fact. There's not a single rugby player out there, whether we're South African, Australian, English, or New Zealand, that wouldn't love to play golf with either Carter, Cullen, or McCaw, or have them over for dinner. It was a tough,
okay,
tough
so let's
decision.
Go through. So let's go. I'll give you what I'll give you what I think you're going to go with as well, Gary, and then I'll give you what I would have gone with. But I agree with you. Absolutely tough decision. This. I mean, all of them absolutely quality players. So let's have a look. Henrik was first up, and he said C, Lomu. Okay. We then had Oracle coming in with D, Carter. Lonely or the Brave also came in with Carter. Henrik made the comment that for him, Richie McCaw is the champion, the best rugby player ever, no contest, although he suspected that you'll go for C. Faddy Van Sale joining us on Facebook, he's gone D, Dan Carter. And here's me. I think you're going to go with B. I've got a feeling you're going to go Christian Cullen, but my choice is Dan Carter. Dan Carter and Johnny Wilkinson, probably two of my favorite players of all time. And for me, if I had to pick a fly half, I would pick Dan Carter ever so slightly ahead of Johnny Wilkinson. I just feel maybe he had a bit more, maybe just had a little bit more to bring. But for me, both of them, consummate professionals. And for me, I couldn't look past Carter, but what a hard choice. So what did you go with?
Carter was my second choice, and it was really, really tough. I'm a McCaw fan. I always have.
Right.
I have. I have two All Black jerseys in my cupboard, both of them signed by McCaw. Having said that, I asked Barney a few years ago to get me one signed by McCaw and Carter, which he never quite got right, but that's okay. So it is McCaw. He's my favourite All Black of all times. And I think that, I'm not saying that he's the best. If I had to choose a rugby player, he just didn't know how to take a step backward. He just didn't know how to do anything other than win. And I think that he brought All Black rugby has always been powerful. They've been the best nation in the world or second best during periods. But if you had to say, he has an All Black and this is what they want you to be, it would be Richie McCaw.
Richie McCaw. So that's your one. Look, I mean, as I say, such a tough one, such a good chat. I'm just making the banners a little bit bigger there. I don't know if it's my eyes, but I was battling to read them there. Gary, did you say then you're going to – so no one – well, no one went as their first choice with McCaw there. But did you say you were going to tell us a rugby betting story? A golf betting story. Oh, golf betting. Okay.
Loss of all time. About, I don't know, we could work it out when the guy wins a major. It must have been about 27 years ago. I opened a sports betting business. We were slightly undercapitalized in those days. I did it with one of my best friends from all time, a guy called Milton Maloon, who most of you probably know. He's a great golfer and just a guy who's been around punting and everywhere. Great, great guy. And we moved in together. We didn't have enough money to pay the rent. Not that that stopped us living in a great house in Auckland, in Oaklands. We didn't have enough money to buy food. Not that that stopped us eating some of the best restaurants in South Africa. We opened a sports betting business called SA Sportsbook. And Millie very much worked for me and he had to go find the clients. And I used to do the betting. It was probably 1994. It actually was in 1994. And we're starting to bet and everything. And Milton's trying to learn from me. And we're battling along. And we make a few rand. And we don't get paid. It's a mess. It's a complete mess. And we're trying to hustle on the golf course. And everything's ugly. But we're surviving. We survive as we always have survived. Anyway, we start to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel come March. And we're starting to have a few wins. And everything's coming right. And I find a girlfriend at the time. I had hundreds of them, but this one I was a little bit more serious about. No, I'm only joking. So, and she works at Sun City, which was one of my favorite hunting grounds. I must be honest. I had a great record at Sun City. Those croupiers, oof, I used to punish them. But anyway, that's a story for another day and perhaps not on this show. And anyway, I'm not so, anyhow, come now, the US Masters. Millie's a scratch golfer. He knows everything about golf, he tells me. So, my girlfriend at the time at Sun City, and she calls me on the Thursday and she says she's off on Friday and Saturday. Why don't I come round there? The weather's still fantastic. We can have a little bit of fun. We'll do a little bit of this and that, whatever it is. And I said, let me just, I've got to work. It's a Masters. We're busy. And Millie over here, there were no cell phones. They come in about a year later, I think. And Millie says to me, you know what, Gary, I know everything about golf. I've learned a bit about the betting from you as well. Go down to your girlfriend. I'll run the Masters. You've got nothing to worry about. And while he's saying that to me, smoking a joint and having a beer and everything, I wasn't 100% convinced, but I thought, I'll take my chances. He's not an idiot. He's not going to want to lose money yet. He knows we need the money to eat. He's going to be clear. He's going to be smart. And I say, you know what, Millie? He had the keys to the office. Do your best. Play it small. Try trade a little bit. Try keep us a few winners. Maybe punt one or two yourself. You know what to do. He says, we don't worry about anything. Don't think about anything. Just go and have a good time. And I get in the car with slight reservation, but, you know, I head out to Sun City and they start the first round of the Masters and I phone Millie and he doesn't answer the phone because now the joints got bigger and the beers have been turned into whiskey. But anyway, eventually he gets phoned me back and he says to me in my room, we've got one loser. I don't even want to tell you who it is because you're going to sit and stress. We've got one loser. And anyway, the man is out of the tournament. I said, what do you mean he's out of the tournament? He said, no, he cannot make a par. You don't have to worry about anything.
Which year was it, Gary? You remember?
I think it was 94. I think 94. We'll check that.
Okay. No, that's fine. Because I'm just trying to, in my mind, try and think of which which year this could be.
So you see, he'll tell me on the Friday who the golfer is. And he says he's gone for somebody and his oak is playing magnificent. He's hitting every fairway. He's hitting the greens in regulation. He's under par. This clown that we're standing, never going to win a major in his life. He's absolutely useless. And Milton convinces me like no other human being can, that we got nothing to worry about. And Thursday night, I go out, I have a few pots. I'm not worried and everything. And I've got Lauren and things are fantastic. And Friday morning, I get a call from Millie. You don't have to worry. The Oakley lady is a Lazabelle. I think he made 74 or 76. He's gone from 25-1 to 150-1. I'm not taking Becker there. And I said, Millie, take back a little bit. How much are we standing in for? So he's standing in for about 175,000 rand. Millie, my car only costs 45,000 rand. The house we're living in Oakland that we're renting only costs 350 grand. We can never pay if he wins. Take back. He said, don't worry. You said you weren't going to interfere. The man cannot win. If there's one thing I know golf. I don't want to have this conversation any longer. And he puts the phone down, and that's that. Anyway, I'll fast forward to Friday, to Sunday, when Milton arrives at Sun City, whiter than the pillar behind me. We're gone. We're completely gone. Elizabeth burns it up in 2 and 3. I'm trying to think who was chasing him home in the fourth round. It was a no-name brand. I don't know. I can't remember now. Millie might even be on the chat. Might be watching. If he is, Millie will remember for sure who was chasing Elizabeth behind home.
I'll quickly look up the...
Go see who came second there. I don't want to criticize the guy too much. Let me go have a quick look.
I'll quickly look. While you carry on, Gary, I'll look.
Okay, you go have a look there.
So yeah, I'll have a quick look.
Go have a look there. And that was it. We did 175,000 rand. We never had another chance. It was the end of our business. We borrowed money from wherever we could. We asked people to wait. It was just a complete nightmare. We were completely, completely motherless, stone cold out. There were no restaurants. There was nothing. It was like being in lockdown. We were two miserable oaks sitting there thinking what we did. The next, I'll be honest, and after that, our form was so bad. The next win that we had, I think if you go and look, hey, Brent, we certainly had our wings clipped. We owed everybody money, but we're paying it off slowly. And one bookmaker laid us an even 5,000. Miguel Indurain to win the Tour de France. That was our next win. We just continued the downhills. It was just nightmare stuff. Anyway, we've done 175 grand there, and Milton still complains about it today. I want to say this. When anybody asks you what their biggest loss of all time was, 175 doesn't sound like a lot of money. I rent in any time.
Not in today's terms, maybe.
Let me just qualify that. It was that weekend that I got involved with my wife. And subsequently, Lauren and I have been together for the last 26 years. And our average cost, Lauren cost me on average 2 to 3 million rand a year just to keep her in the style that she's accustomed to. Now, you multiply 3 by 26 and you're quickly going to get to 78 million. If anybody else has ever lost 78 million rand, that would be better than me. I've done my 78 million. There it is.
That's further down. There we go. The Thabal. He beat Lehman by 2 shots, and Larry Myers and Tom Kite were in behind him.
If you go look at it, there it is. A man started off with 74.
Yeah.
He was gone.
He was gone. I mean, he was six shots behind Myers after the first round. 5 shots behind Tom Kite. And I mean, Myers and Kite, I think Myers won a major, but Kite and Lehman, I mean, they were decent players. He probably had someone, it was probably some other guy who faded in the last round chasing him as well.
I'm pretty sure Tom Lehman won a British Open. I'm pretty sure that Mars won.
Yes.
Mars definitely won a Masters at some stage.
He won Tom something, Kite yes.
Everybody, that's not to say that Elizabeth stopped there. Elizabeth went on and won more majors as well and another Masters also. But exactly, he was 6 or 7 shots behind just those guys, right? So that was that. So that's why I learned very quickly that nobody's ever out of anything in a golf tournament. Until they got that MC next to their name, anybody can come back at golf. People shoot 59. That's a fact. So never be too sure in anything that you do in life. But let's go away from sport.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you where it came up. I asked, one of my questions is, who's my favorite all-time singer? And why?
Right. That's the one I'd forgotten about. Yes, let me bring that up.
There you go. The only reason it's got anything to do with sport is because today when I was on the elliptical trainer training for an hour and 27 minutes, no, it was just 27 minutes. It felt like an hour and 27 minutes. I wanted to watch something to get me through the half hour, and I chose a guy who is my favorite singer to watch. And I watched him for the full half an hour, and I loved every second, and that was why I put up that there. And, I mean, you feel free to have a go as well, Brent. You're entitled to win the 250s. It's not something that I think my family would even know. But, again, a little bit different to the All Black, Kay Courtson. I don't really know him. I don't really know a hell of a lot about his music. But the others are all different in their own rights, aren't they? You know, Bruce Springsteen, they call him the boss, Michael Jackson, the king of pop, Eminem, a great rapper. So they're all different genres and everything. So not an easy, for me, to be perfectly honest, the other three, I don't even listen to. It's only one, that one wins by distance. It's not tough, like the All Black question. That one wins by a mile. There's no contest in that one. We'll just wait for one or two more to pop in there.
Lonely and the Braves was a guy that I did see. I would have gone with B as well, Gary. I think I would have gone with Springsteen, because I'm also quite a big Springsteen fan. I mean, if you'd had Kenny Rogers in there, then there would have been no contest for me. I would have gone Kenny Rogers, but I'm a big fan of Bruce Springsteen as well.
Kenny Rogers died, what, a couple of weeks
ago? Yeah, that was about a week ago, week and a bit ago. I've been listening to a lot of his music. I always say there are only two people I watch in concert live, because I don't like concerts. Kenny Rogers and Johnny Cash, and now both are gone, so I won't be going to any more concerts.
I saw Michael Jackson at the Ellis Park Athletic Stadium. Believe it or not, Michael Jackson performed at the Athletic Stadium. We all went there in one of my trucks. We were getting the cars in. So we had a knick-knack business in those days, and we went 40, I think 25 of us in the back of the truck. So the driver drove there, said he had a delivery, so he could get us right to the ground. And we went in this truck, and we all thought it was so cool. Until we got there, we realized we smelt of cheese sauce. Nobody came near us. It was an absolute nightmare. We smelt like knick-knacks. We had just yellow flavor all over us. Are we giving it to the first correct answer or all the correct answers they're going to draw, Brent? I think we should just, you decide that. But
yes, okay.
This was a no-brainer. It is the boss, Bruce Springsteen. And
the boss, Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, maybe we should just shoot up another one there, Brent, and then because we got just so we don't run out
of
time.
Yeah, we don't run out of time. I like this one, Gary, that you put up here. This is your favorite lock in rugby.
This is my favorite lock in rugby. I limited it to four Springboks. I could have put in other locks.
It was Frik de Pryor you were talking about, eh? I put him in. Okay, yeah.
You know, if I had to go, there's another, you know, but I'm still under par. If we had to go for locks out of South Africa, I could think of a few as well. One of my all-time favorites and a great, great rugby player. I could go back to long before. People say I've got a good memory, but I can go back to Billy Beaumont, who came here, and I can go back to Willie John McBride. And I'll just mention one thing about how those two British Lions, while British Lions often choose a big lock, do you know this, eh, Brent? That recently British Lions have chosen a big lock to captain the side for the simple reason that the coach, I think it was Ian McGeehan or one of them, said that he liked the fact that they could go there and stand up to the big All Blacks and the big Springboks and the big Wallabies and have a physical presence rather than a smaller guy. If you look at Willie John McBride's side, all the great rugby players that he had, that he's still captain, and Billy Beaumont also had a lot of great rugby players. And Billy Beaumont wasn't guaranteed his place, actually, I thought, in the test side. But Martin Johnson, to me, could stand up with any lock that's ever
played. Yeah, Martin Johnson, 2003 World Cup. He was the captain of England in 2003.
That had Wilkinson and a lot of great rugby players. Then there's obviously Colin Mead. The list goes on and on and on. But these are four guys that I'm lucky enough to have seen them all. I caught Frik de Pryor at the real tail end of his career. Mm. Bucky Buerta, an absolute legend. Let's be perfectly honest. A legend who they called him the enforcer. But let's be honest, he was more than that. He was a talented rugby player. That's won World Cups. That's won Super Rugby. Great, great rugby player. Then there's Matfield, who to me never let you down. I just feel that, and I'm not giving my answer here, I just feel that if you needed somebody in the last minute to win a line out for you, to score a try, an attacking line out, or to win a line out for you where you're defending and maybe steal the opposition ball, I'm not sure there's anybody I would choose to do that job other than Victor Matfield. I don't remember Matfield losing too many line outs. Another guy that never took a backward step. Not too many locks do take backward step. They're big, aggressive guys, and you know what I mean? They're the guys in the team that are meant to go forward. One thing people don't always realize with locks is that sometimes they make the front row a difference to the front row. You go ask the great props, the Oster Runs, the John or the Hookers, John Smith, whatever, what a difference it had having Matfield and Buerta behind them. But those are those two legends that played together. Then let's go to Cobus Visser, who, a little bit before them, won a World Cup. I have no doubt that South Africa wouldn't have won that World Cup without Kobus Visser. He was just a rock. He was the guy that if they had to turn around to, they knew he was there. They knew he was never going to ever take a step backwards. They knew that he played for the whole of South Africa, like most of them did. Maybe not as celebrated in a lot of respects as the other two, but a great, great rugby player in his own right. A great commentator who, 25 years later, he's still doing stuff for the game. And he's still a celebrity and people who still love him. I remember watching Nadal play Federer and everybody that saw Visser asked for a photograph with him. And, you know, he's that great personality and everything. You know, now I've got no more. I'm level four. I say it again, I do my money. Then there's Brooke. I think he was voted Springbok Rugby Player of the last century. Yeah. I saw very little of him. I remember the legend that he was then. I remember pictures of him tackling that All Black where he done it. He's hitting him in the face or not, like the hands like that or behind the head, whatever it is. He had so many great stories about Frick. A lot of them that my dad's reminded me about this week. Great, great stories. Little stories that everybody's heard about, but I wouldn't be doing my dad any justice if I didn't mention any of them. He's told them to me 300 times. I've repeated them 3,000 times. The one time when the team that he played against got beaten, I think 55-0 or whatever the score was, something and nil, and I asked Frick about the other team, and he says he thought they were very lucky to get nil. then there was the other story with him when my dad reminded me today when they drew with the Lions in the Currie Cup final after Northern should have won by 30 or 40 points. And in his interview there, he said he thought the better team drew. And how often does that happen in life, eh, Brent? So for me, my choice was Frick de Preer.
Frick de Preer. Okay, so just running through, that was from the previous one. Henrik had said Matt Field. Oracle, Joe came in as well with Matt Field. So Lonely also came in with, so the choices were really predominantly Matt Field and Buckies. But yeah, Frick de Preer, I think you're privileged to have caught a bit of Frick de Preer, Gary. He was just, I can remember my first memories. Funny you mentioned Billy Beaumont and that. My first memories of rugby were really, I think it was the 1980 British Lions tour here. And there was the Pacomo Wheat Picks. Like, you know, they wouldn't even call them stickers. They were cardboard things. You used to get them and you stick out. And I always remember Bill Beaumont was there. I think he was the loose head prop there for the Lions. And it was very rare for a prop to captain a side as well. And I'll never forget those matches, you know, that whole series. As I said to you on last week's show, I actually went and checked. I actually got the score right from that French test in Loftus where I said it was 37-15. And how can I remember that when I was 6 years old or 14 years old or whatever I was? But I can't remember, you know, things from last year. It fascinates me. But those were days. And Gary, let's face it, for us as well, it was sporting-wise, we were in isolation. So when you had a big international sporting event, you know, it stuck in your mind. You looked forward to it for weeks and weeks. And, I mean, that's almost what our next sporting event's going to be like that, if I can put it to you that way. We're going to have gone without sport for a while. We're going to be looking so forward to it.
Yeah. And, you know, the French, you mentioned the French there. They had a few decent locks as well that are – I saw, and I forget most of their names now. They had a guy. There's a guy. Is it Benitez?
Oh yeah, he was. Yeah, he was.
He said he scored a try that would have knocked South Africa out of the World Cup final in the semi. Out of the World Cup semi.
Yeah, I think Ruben Krier says he got underneath him. It was that big pile up in the wet. Yeah.
Frenchman says he got it, and then there was a guy, Olivier Roumar, who came from France. Played for Natal. Played for the Sharks. If you remember him, brilliant. With Terry Lacroix came down, he played centre or fly half for the Sharks as well. But France had a few decent locks in their time as well. But it's a lock question there. And, yeah, just like it was just tough for people because it was probably before their time. But the man won rugby player of the century certainly can get my vote.
Let's go on to the cricket one and we've got all of that and we can discuss anything else. This is your favourite all-rounder, Gary. And Mike Proctor, I caught the end of his career, really top class around. My dad, I think if you gave my dad this list, he would probably choose Proctor as well. He was a big fan of his. Of course, there was Sobers, Jacques Callas, and Botham. Any comments on those guys?
Well, I saw quite a bit of Mark Proctor. Now, it looked like he bowled up the wrong leg. I saw Proctor, one of the first memories I got was at Kingsmead. Early first morning of a proper cricket match against Transvaal. Those were huge games, Natal against Transvaal. Barry Richards, they had proper cricketers in those days, Natal. Henry Fotheringham, they were a proper cricket side. He played for Transvaal later, but Transvaal had good cricketers as well. And I remember Proctor running up with a slightly shorter runner. He was a little bit older in those days. and he started off, it must have pitched maybe 2.5, maybe 3 foot outside the off stump, and the Transvaal opening batsman just shouldered arms like this without any sort of difficulty. It was going to miss bar, he thought probably 2 foot, and I remember the middle stump getting knocked clean out of the ground. Proctor also did our show with us, Brent. I don't know if you were on the shows in those days. I think with Barney.
No, I think it was a bit before my time. Well, I was never on with Proctor, I don't think.
But Mark Proctor was on the show with us. You know, we mentioned Barney. And Barney tells, I just want to stop for 1 second, because Barney tells one of my favorite stories of all time. And he tells it a lot better than me, and I'm doing it an injustice, but I'll repeat it to the best of my ability from what Barney told me. So there's a rugby match. I think it was taking place in Ireland, a Club Ireland game. And the referee they got was Andre Watson, who was already one of the most celebrated and recognized referees in world rugby. But they still have to go do games at lower divisions as part of their what they have to do. And he gets involved in this game in Ireland. I think it was in Ireland, Barney might correct me. And they're just giving him shit from the word go. Whatever he does, they tell him is different. They score a try, forward pass, right? They do this, there's a knock on in the scrum. And they are on his case. They are driving him mad. This is going on for 25 minutes. They don't leave him alone. He's pulling his hair out, and eventually calls them together. He says, I need to see all 30 of you here. Come here now. And all 30 of them get together, and he says to them, guys, this is ridiculous. You know, this is not how it works. There are 31 referees on the rugby field. The 31 rugby referees on this field. We cannot continue like this. And the one Irishman says, yes, there's 31, and you're not in the top 15, you doers. Anyway, that's another story about that anyway.
But, you know, you mentioned Barney. I think he'd be a good guy to have on the show as well, eh? Yeah. To have a chat with him, because he's got lots of stories over the years as well. I must get back in contact with him.
I've got a number I can give it to you. Then, obviously, off-field sobers. His record speaks for itself. 6 sixes in an over. The record, the highest test score of all time for a long, long time, for tens of years, for decades, from an all-rounder. Regarded by most as the greatest of all time. I couldn't include him because I never saw him. Then there's Callis, whose record will blow anybody's mind away. He averages more than Ponting. He averages more than all these great batsmen, more than Lara. And he took how many hundreds of test wickets? And some people might have even said that as a limited overs cricketer. He was a little bit stodgy. Go look at his record. His runs per over, run per ball, not too bad either. Slip fielder. I'm not sure Callis ever dropped anything. Great. Perfect. Then obviously Beefy Botham. He perhaps not all as good as all of the three of them in different departments, but he was, like all of them, a huge winner. They all have one thing in common. They're huge, huge winners. Botham went and won Ashes series almost single-handedly against the great Australian side. And he'd done everything that he could possibly do, and he carried on, and he carried on until I think the World Cup was his last stint as a commentator. He's walked for charity. He's one of the boys. He was given, I remember what Dean Jones, Australian, said about Botham. He said, I'm going to pay Botham the biggest compliment I can pay to any cricketer. And that he's a good enough cricketer and bloke to be an Aussie. And for an Australian to say a lot, my choice there, just shading it, was Ian Botham.
Ian Botham. Okay, so let's see. Oracle Rugby. We had Henrik and Lonely went for C, which was Callis, and then Oracle came in with Botham. So well done, Oracle, on that one. I must say, I was a massive Botham fan, Gary. And, you know, more recently, I guess there's a couple of other guys you could put into the mold. I mean, you look at a guy like Andrew Flintoff. He was one of my favorite cricketers. Now, if you look at his career stats, they didn't necessarily match the very best. But sure, but in terms of personality on the field and in terms of being able to take the ball from his captain on, you know, on day five when the other team are playing out for the draw and to be able to get that crucial wicket. And then, of course, Stokes, who I'd put very much, I would say he's better than Flintoff, but in that same mold, he's the guy you give the ball or he's the guy you send into bat when you want something to happen. They're winners, basically.
Well, they all are. That's the one thing about great all-rounders. They're all winners. We can go a little bit further. The Richard Hadleys. He was predominantly about, obviously, the late Clive Ross.
Oh, Clive Ross is brilliant, yes.
There weren't too many better cricketers than Clive Ross, let's be perfectly honest. The list goes on. There's one that slipped my mind that I can go back. You said about somebody that took a ball. It was somebody, I also caught the very end of his career. but had a reputation of when they needed a wicket, they could go to him. And there's another opening batsman, and that was Eddie Barlow. South Africa got a great... He's Brian McMillan. Brian McMillan, another really tough, great cricketer that never took a backward step as well. So we have a history of great, great all-rounders. Maybe some of the best in the world of all time. But just for me, I like both of them. I like his attitude. I just like him as a person, and that's why he got that vote from me.
Excellent. Well, guys, if you, the guys who won prize, we didn't have anyone win the big one. I think 3 out of 5 was the most. But guys, drop me an email and I'll organize your vouchers. I'll go through to Kerry for that. I know, Gary, you also wanted to ask a couple of cricket questions. But before we get on to that, any other stories at this point? Anything else that you wanted to share on the show?
No, I think that we've done well. I mean, I see now that we've gone over an hour for the first time ever in this.
Oh, we have. So. I didn't realize that. I thought we were about 40 minutes, to be honest.
We're going to get paid overtime by our sponsors, I hope, although we'll take a slight pay reduction like all other superstars are around the world now. I'll just say this about sport, and it's time that people are really coming together, the professionals. And the soccer players, most of them are taking pay cuts. None of them watch it, but it's important that the guys that are earning £120,000 a week and £90,000 a week and everything, they got a lot of money. For them to take a pay cut to keep the guys that keep the stadiums intact is important. Without the stadiums, without the backroom staff, Brent, there's no sport. It's not only about the superstars. That's a fact. And if the superstars can make a difference, you and I, whatever we do, as charitable, as nice as we want to be, we'll never make in our lifetime what some of these guys make in a year. But most of them are being hell of a charitable and giving a lot of their time, whether they're superstars in the sports arena or entertainment arena. It's unprecedented times. It's crazy. It's ridiculous. But kudos to the guys that are taking pay cuts and are not taking salaries and giving these massive donations. There's massive donations that are happening from in South Africa, whether it be from the Ruperts, whether it be, I don't want to miss anybody, the Oppenheimers, Mutsepe, there's a lot of them. I don't want to mention people, but thanks to all of them, you know, and thanks to all the cricketers, all the rugby players, all the soccer players, all the Formula One guys that are doing their bit. We will get through this, and there will be a lot of changes in sport. Like I said, there'll be events that we don't ever see again that are now gone. They'll be off the calendar forever. Maybe we're going to see a lot of changes in soccer. Maybe those 180 or £250,000 a week salaries are gone. Maybe those £200 million transfers are out of the way. That wouldn't be a bad, that to me wouldn't be a bad thing. There has to be some sort of, in the world, one step back and everything. I'll tell you, there are a lot of great autobiographies out there as well. I'll tell you a great autobiography. The Agassi autobiography.
Brilliant. I read that.
Great, great autobiography. And I'll tell you something else about Agassi that nobody else knows. He's born on the same day as me, a little bit younger than me, but both born on the 29th of April. Anyway, that's irrelevant. So,
but I just on that Agassi one quickly, Gary, just one thing that struck me of that Agassi book, when he went through his youth, his dad pushed him very hard, Agassi.
Very hard.
To the point that, and he pushed all his kids hard, but he pushed other kids and they didn't have the ability of Agassi. But Agassi was the one who went through and became an absolute superstar. And I remember Agassi looking back on his life and saying, as a youngster, yeah, he basically hated his dad because his dad was pushing him and pushing him. But if his dad hadn't pushed him like that, he never would have achieved what he did. And it's such an interesting one because there's nothing worse than a parent who pushes and pushes and pushes. People always, but at the same time, often those are the kids who go on to be superstars. And it's that fine line. And I just always found that a very interesting take on his book, that he was acknowledging that while he actually hated his dad when he was younger, he was also acknowledging the role he played in getting him there.
You know, maybe that's not a, you know, that counts against me. Maybe it's about the parents knowing best. And maybe the parents knowing that, you know, he looked after Agassi. He looked after Agassi. He was there when he grew up. And maybe he saw that he could take a little bit more. We don't know.
Yeah, maybe probably.
He saw something special that nobody else could see. Maybe he just knew that he needed to be pushed a little bit more. We'll never know that. His father hasn't, I don't know if his father's ever written or done anything about it, but he certainly got the best out of Agassi. Agassi was a great, great tennis player. He won tennis tournaments he should never, ever have won. He won Wimbledon. The man.
Yeah. He was a clay court man, really. I mean, when he came and won Wimbledon, it was unbelievable.
I'll give you a little bit of a betting hint. I know Wimbledon's been cancelled this year, which is tragic. I read someone's been cancelled because they had cancer. And that they were thinking about cancelling other events because they cancelled the British Open Golf, the Open Golf, because if they cancelled it at a certain date, insurance would pay. But the thing is, the one thing about tennis, that a South African tennis player called Eddie Edwards, born on the 3rd of July, same day as my dad. I don't know how he remembered his useless facts, but Eddie Edwards, I played golf with him once, and Eddie Edwards regularly got to the third or fourth round of Wimbledon.
I remember him.
And he had a service, to be perfectly honest, he couldn't serve and volley because he was one of the few guys that if he tried to serve and volley, he'd get to the net before the ball did. He didn't have much of a serve as well. And I remember saying to him without any respect, he did a hell of a well, Eddie. I'm not taking anything away from him, but he was definitely not a grass court player. That's all I'm saying. And I said to him, Eddie, how did you ever win a match at Wimbledon? Never mind three or four every single year. How did you do it? You can't serve, you can't volley by the standards of the other guys. How did you do it? He said, I had a great return off serve. And a return off serve at Wimbledon is as important as a serve. And that's what Agassi had. He had a great, great return off serve.
Yeah, he did.
He had anticipation where they were going. And he was a great mover. He was a great athlete. And that's what got Agassi a few couple of Wimbledons.
Like Jimmy Connors as well. I remember Connors had a remarkable return of serve. And it's a good point. You often think about who the best servers are, but don't always think Edberg as well. Edberg was another one who had a great return. But anyway, we could do a whole show on talking tennis. And I mean, I know tennis betting is big as well. But Gary, how do you want to end things?
Okay, I'm going to ask a cricket question. I'm going to ask who has, and I haven't got all day, we're going to sign off now, and they must get the answer to you by WhatsApp or an email or before the... I'm going to ask, in the history, since it started, since inception, who has the highest batting average at the RPL? And who has the lowest bowling average at the RPL?
Okay, since inception. We'll give the guys... I'll carry on talking for 30 seconds after you leave, Gary, and then the guys must get it in on the chat before then. Because otherwise, otherwise, guys will just Google it. So we'll get that in. No, it mustn't be Googled. Have a go at this one, guys.
If you guys enjoyed it, we can do it again next week. You make that decision. We'll decide what we want to do. We'll talk about it during the week. The guys can let us know. I certainly enjoyed it. It makes the days go better. It makes the nights go quicker. We've already done the first week, guys. There's only two more weeks to go with distance. There might be another two or three or four weeks afterwards. But there's worse places to be than home. That I promise you. Let's all just stay home and be good and have a lot of fun. And won't be long before sports are up and going again. If it's June or July, we'll do it again. And we'll be punting bigger than ever.
Excellent. Gary, just want to quickly, I realize we hadn't popped onto the website. Yeah. This is sapoker.online. So, guys, they're happy to get hold of me. I'll send the link. We've already had Keelan Creel watching the show earlier saying he's been on and he's enjoying it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to give it a go as well. And the guys can go. I'll put the link on the forum. We've got a thread on the forum as well about online poker and that. I'll put that link on so the guys can go check it out, playing some of the tournaments. And also, for me, what I enjoy is playing with my mates, you know, having a game, organizing it. And I know some guys that have gone to Poker Bros. And, in fact, I think it's Henrik on the site here has been to Poker Bros and set things up with his mates.
Look who arrived on my chat. Milton Maloon and Barney Gernon. We were talking about him earlier. There he is wearing a beanie.
Let me put you up there.
There you go. There he is. Let me put it the right way around. Hold on. Let me get in front there. There's Milton, the guy that stuck me
clean. Oh, there's Barney.
And there's Barney looking... Oh, he's looking comfortable. Brent, believe it or not,
yes.
I know that most...
I see Barney's had a kid now. He's had a kid.
That's what I was going to say. Barney is a father. He's not mature enough to be a child, and he's had a father. But anyway, let's see what happens. Brent, we'll see you next week. It's been a lot of fun to carry on with these two. Brent, see you. Barney, Brent actually said he wants you to do a show with him in the next couple of weeks.
Excellent. I'll drop there you a line, Barney. Shot, man. Brent, good seeing you.
Brent.
Cheers.
I'll send it to him now. Don't worry. Barney, wait for me. Brent, thank you. Guys, thank you very much. It's been absolutely fantastic. We'll do it again in the near future, hopefully next week. Brent, thank you. Good luck, everybody.
Excellent. I'll send you a screenshot of... And we got the answers quickly. Gary... Oh, no, don't worry. Gary's gone. I don't know the answers to these, but let's just run through some of them quickly. Johnny Bairstow, Henrik Roodsharma and Mohammed Shami, Gilchrist and Muralitharan. So we'll see. I'll send Gary a screenshot of that and he can confirm that. What's that? Is that Barney's number that Oracle's listing? Guys, thanks for watching. Do let us know what you think of these shows. I certainly do enjoy the chats. I think it's nice to do something at this time when there is no betting, where we can at least talk about betting stories and sports stories for that matter. And certainly Barney Gurnham, who I used to be on the Betting World show with there, was phoning Gary now. He'll make a great guest on the show, so I'll get a hold of him as well. He'll also have some top-class stories and a few other guys that we're earmarking as well. Guys, thanks for watching in the live chat. Oracle, Henrik, Lonely are the Brave, Joe, good to have all of you on the show. Shane, I hope you enjoyed it. And guys, we'll be in touch soon. I'll probably do a show early next week as well. We'll interview probably one of the horse racing guys. Thanks, everyone, and go well.